The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the hole 6010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus.
Welcome in to one of our favorite editions of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. It is live from Indianapolis, Indiana, at the site of the 2020 NFL Scouting Combine. I'm Field Yates. For those of you that may forget, this is Matthew Berry to my left, and then to his left is Stefania Bell, and then to her left is to Mike Clay, and Daniel Dopp is right here in the middle. Hello, friends.
Yep.
Hey, hi, friends.
How are you? Good to see everyone. Secret Squirrel only brought four microphones for a podcast of five people. Good job, Secret Squirrel. So he is without microphone.
I don't need one.
There you go.
Comment to Secret Squirrel right there.
That's Secret Squirrel right there. So just so you understand what's going on here, what happens at the NFL Combine is that a number of coaches and general managers address the media. If you've been watching any of the footage, you probably see them at the media. And weirdly, this year, it was all at the same time. A lot of the coaches spoke at the same time. So what we did is very organized, like Secret Squirrel made a schedule and assigned everyone a certain podium. So like Field was going to cover podium one. Everyone that came up to podium one, he was going to cover. I was podium three, which included Kyle Smith, the new, you know, general manager. It's not exactly his title, but, of the Redskins, and Ron Rivera was also on podium three. Stefania, I believe you got podium five, right?
Guess who was there?
It's Kyle Shanahan.
And John Lynch.
Right. And Mike, what podium did you
I was on four. I was trusted with the Detroit Lions, a GM and coach.
Fair
of
enough.
Course, Daniel puts me the best person here on the Lions. I mean, it makes sense.
Mike, it makes total sense. But so here's what happened. So I'm like there. I'm like, you know what? Secret Squirrel assigned me to podium three. I am going to watch podium three like a hawk. And what do? I look over to podium one and Field Yates is chatting up a storm, not paying attention to a thing. I have no idea what you learned from podium one because you were chatty Cathy over there. You're the belle of the ball. Here's the problem with Field Yates at the combine, right? Is that you understand, Field spent part of his career in an NFL front office with two different NFL franchises. So he knows every scout. He knows every coach, every general manager, every assistant general manager, plus all the media that he knows because of his role now at ESPN. So everyone wants to come up and talk to Field.
He's a big star.
Big star.
Good looking. He has a tan. Just 100%. Got back from his honeymoon. I mean, everybody wants
looks
to talk
good.
To him.
Whole thing. Blah, 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 blah. Chatty Cathy. Every once in a while, he might glance at podium one. But I just want to say right now that I think the podcast you're about to hear will have rock solid information from podiums two through five. But I make no claims whatsoever about the veracity of podium one.
Good to know. And with that, should we just get right to it? Because it's going to be a boondoggle of a podcast. Because that's what I've been doing in lieu of Stefania Bell, who's been getting down to business like Matthew did at podium three. You said you were podium three?
I wasn't podium three. Attention.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so we've got a
like a hawk
list of topics. And we're sort of playing a game of buy or sell.
No bathroom breaks?
No bathroom breaks for me. No, 100%. Stefania Bell.
Yeah.
No.
So, yeah, the one thing about Indianapolis that's really nice too is that despite the fact that it is quite cold and miserable outside, you can walk through by tunnels everywhere, so you can avoid a lot of the wind outside that's been festering.
It's snowing right now.
The past couple of days. So
currently snowing.
We're going to have a topic. We're going to buy it or sell it, basically, is how we're going to play this game.
You know what? When coaches address the media, especially now, before the NFL draft, before free agency, before even a new CBA has been signed.
Correct.
There's, you know, the reporters have to ask their questions. They're trying to fill time, but there's a lot of just sort of like
a lot of coach speak.
A lot of coach speak.
So we're going to buy or sell. We're going to do our best to decipher whether some of this stuff that they said was worthwhile, whether it was just coach speak, and whether there is a fantasy draw from those comments. Let's begin in Los Angeles with Austin Eckler and the idea that Austin Eckler could be a three down back next year, while reminding people that Melvin Gordon is currently not under contract for the Chargers, and it sounds like he may be sort of heading elsewhere based off of all the tea leaves that you can read here in not just Indianapolis, but really the last season he was there. We kind of got the idea that he was probably done after this year. Matthew, Austin Eckler, incredible last year. But are you buying the idea of him being a three down back? Because it feels like if they may have said this in the past, but sometimes like fell short of actually executing it on Sundays.
So I do. So this is interesting, right? So I think, you know, if you followed this closely, so Tom Telesco, their general manager, was asked a question about this and basically said something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing, but that he believed Austin Eckler could be a true sort of number one workhorse back. Meanwhile, later in the day, Anthony Lynn was asked a similar question, to which he talked about the fact that he really liked Eckler and, you know, loved him, but, you know, wanted to, you know, move him out wide, liked using him in the slot, you know, liked using him all over the place, and so needed another guy. Basically insinuating that whether it was Melvin Gordon or somebody else, that he wanted two running backs, that he liked having two guys in the backfield as well. He talked up Justin Jackson somewhat. And so I think that got made a lot of, and I'm curious what everyone thinks. I buy the idea of Austin Eckler as a 20-touch guy, okay? Because here's the thing. Like, I think a lot of it was made about Anthony Lynn's, oh, we're back to running back by committee. And I think people forget that once Melvin Gordon came back, Austin Eckler was still a fantasy superstar, and it may not be 20 carries. In fact, I don't think even you want 20 carries, but if he's saying, like, I want to use him in the passing game, I want to put him out wide, I want to put him in the slot, like, I want to put him in motion with two backs in the backfield, to me, then, like, I think he still touches the ball 17 to 20 times, even if there's another Melvin Gordon-type running back on that team.
Yeah, I'm going to sell on this one, actually. He's a three-down back. That just concept that he's going to be a complete feature back. You know, I'm picturing the workhorses out there, like your Bells and McCaffreys and guys like that. I don't think he's even close to that conversation. You look at his rushing efficiency last year, right? First 8 games, 3.5 yards per carry. The rest of the way, when he really had Gordon in there, a full go, Melvin Gordon, 5.1, right? His efficiency improved when they didn't have to rely on him for so many carries. So, and by the way, he was 34th in the NFL in carries last year, right? They weren't right. Using him as a workhorse necessarily. I don't think that's going to change. But that said, we've seen Eckler, we've seen James White put together RB1 seasons without having to be a full-on workhorse. I still think with his receiving workload, he can do that.
See, I think this is a semantics conversation, because I think when you say three down back, you're thinking, you're right, you're thinking Le'Veon Bell, you're thinking, a Christian McCaffrey, a guy that like just doesn't come off the field. Mm-hmm. And my argument is that I don't think Eckler comes off the field either, but I think I'm not thinking three down back in the way that like Dalvin Cook was, right? But I'm thinking a guy that's going to be, that can play on all three downs and then use him a variety of ways. I agree with you. Like, I don't think if they have Melvin Gordon or another running back, I don't think he sees more than 10, 12 carries in a game. But I think 17 to 20 touches for Austin Eckler in a game is a very reasonable expectation given what he did last year. And to me, if he's getting 17 to 20 touches a game, he's a three down back to me.
Okay. I think he'll end up second on that team in carries next season.
I don't disagree with that, but I'm merely talking fantasy value.
Will be interesting to see if they add another running back. Eckler himself is now a restricted free agent, so they have a chance to either extend him or potentially have him back on a 1 year tender. Last year, and I don't mean, so Mike Clay obviously is our
break the time field age real quickly on Eckler and me and Mike here.
Well, so I actually think you guys are both, I think you both agree on the idea that he could be a top 12 running back. You just maybe see different, I think you guys actually are saying the same thing, just sort of getting on slightly different avenues.
Right. I say borderline RB1. I think
he's about the same. Best offensive player last year for them, right? And you know, the only reason why
top 12-ish running back.
Yep, yeah. Agreed on that.
We agreed.
Let's get to Aaron Jones, because last year, Mike, and we talked a lot about regression, possible regression.
Free Aaron Jones.
He was, in the same way that Eric Ebron just never stopped scoring touchdowns in 2018, Aaron Jones has kept scoring touchdowns in 2019. Mike, is going into next year, are you going to be hesitant on Aaron Jones just because of the idea that Eric Ebron was awesome throughout 2018, and then in 2019 he was back to what he almost always is, which is just sort of middle of the road tight end? Is Aaron Jones going to be able to keep it up going into next season?
Not in the touchdown department. No way. His, just for reference, his OTD was 10.80 and 19 touchdowns from scrimmage. That sort of gap like that, almost doubling his touchdown total, almost impossible to sustain. Even the best guys, like you think about peak Rob Gronkowski, he couldn't repeat something like that in the next season. So the touchdowns are very likely to drop. Probably more will go to Aaron Rodgers through the passing game, I would think. But it's tough. Like, we're going to get into semantics here, because he can still see enough of a workload. And I mean, this guy caught 49 passes, enough of a workload as a pass catcher to be a solid RB1, but you cannot count on that touchdown total. I don't think he's necessarily going to be a top five running back again.
No, it's really interesting. So Matt LaFleur was asked while he was on the podium some question to the extent of, you know, do you feel like that Aaron Jones showed enough last year, especially when Jamal Williams was hurt, that he can be trusted as a true workhorse feature back? And I actually posted the answer that LaFleur gave there on my Instagram at Matthew Berry TMR, if you want to go check that out. No big deal.
I might follow.
But In essence, if you don't want to, I will tell you, he said some version of it. He says, honestly, no. Like, he's like, we need both guys back there. And in fact, we want to extend the season, the game. We wanted our season to be, you know, one game longer than it was last year. And so we need both guys. And, you know, mm-hmm. meaning Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. He says, honestly, we probably need a third as well. And so to me, that makes me feel like you're going to see Jamal Williams a decent amount, and you're also going to see a third running back that they add one way or the other get some work. Now, who's the first Packers running back you're drafting? It's Aaron Jones. It's not close. Who's going to lead that team in fantasy points, assuming health? It's going to be Aaron Jones. But given the obvious touchdown regression that's coming and the fact that LaFleur would not say, like, he is going to be the guy, does that give me pause? It does, and it feels like Aaron Jones probably winds up somewhere in the 10 to 15 range among running backs, not the top five or six guy he was, you know, last year.
Yeah, I have him at 7 in my early rankings, so that's a drop from 2. I mean, he finished number 2 last year, so I'm still dropping him quite a bit, but I still think he can put a top 10 season.
Do you? Yeah. Well, listen, I love him. Free Aaron Jones, we'll see.
Why do you hate Aaron Jones?
Obviously, you know, and listen, 10 to 15 may be too low. Let me see what they do with that running back position, who that third person is that they add, whether it's a guy, just a guy, or, you know.
An investment.
Or investment.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that.
We'll keep an eye. But look, Aaron Jones is still going to be the Packers running back you want, but certainly that was a eye-opening statement from Coach LaFleur.
There was a vote of confidence by Matt LaFleur for Alan Lazard that caught your eye or ears, Matthew. You believe the idea, you buy in the idea that Alan Lazard, practice squad call-up after having a strong training camp, can be the number 2 wide receiver in Green Bay, which for a long time was a fantasy-relevant role.
Yeah, look, there's a little bit of damning with faint praise. Like, who do I... If I had to pick a Packers wide receiver not named Davante Adams right now that's on their roster, who do I want? I would say it's Alan Lazard. But let's see who comes through, what happens after the draft and free agency. And he's not somebody I would spend a ton of draft capital on, but I do think he's an interesting late round flyer. Not only because Coach LaFleur talked him up and talked about the fact that he had, he'd done all the little things. He'd done everything he'd asked. And playing special teams, you name it, but also because talking to an insider, around the Packers organization, and this is a little nugget that'll be in my post combine column that I write.
Rodgers was in Indy this week. That's really cool. Exactly.
Alan Lazard, spent Thanksgiving with Aaron Rodgers. And there's
they broke bread.
And they, little whatever, hashtag like shower narrative
like
or whatever you want to call
Brady
it.
Brady puts a guy in his Instagram account.
Right.
It's kind of like that.
I'm just saying that he is, by all accounts, the two of them are very close.
Well, let's not forget, it was Aaron Rodgers who basically gave the nod to get Lazard called up in the first place.
So, I mean, listen, when you have a quarterback as talented as Aaron Rodgers, being, close with him and him being invested in your success is not a bad thing for a wide receiver. Can we agree on that?
We can agree on that. Probably a little bit too early. I think we all agree to sort of crown him as the number 2 wide receiver.
No, but it's...
I know. I'm just saying that we're not quite there yet, but maybe if they are less active in free agency or the draft with wide receivers, maybe store Alan Lazard away ahead of guys like Marquez Valdes-Scantling or others that are also on the roster. Stefania, how many times did you contemplate playing O.J. Howard last year and then think better of it and not play him and feel good about it? Or how many times did you take the bait and just say, he's got to catch a pass, right?
Every time it was the wrong decision. Because every time you thought, O.J. Howard, this is going to be the game, it wasn't. And then, all of a sudden, when was it? How late into the season was it?
I think it was like week 17.
It was like the end, right? It was after we saw him catch a baseball, I believe, in the playoffs.
That was a great catch, though. To be fair.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, it was a great catch.
You know, maybe they saw something there. It kind of reminded them that he was there. But honestly, I don't totally get it because the talent seemed to be there, but the opportunity did not occur.
So Mike Clay and it was astutely, I think, confident last year in O.J. Howard. I say astutely, not because it ended up working out. By the way, we were all confident in O.J. Howard. Like, I remember talking about this with you last season. You were bullish on him because he's really good. 19th overall pick in the draft for a reason. Yep. Awesome player at Alabama when he actually got opportunities. He showed some promise as a rookie, and yet last year it just never materialized. And yet now this week the Bucs have basically said, hey, we think he's going to be better in year 2. Are you out of the business of O.J. Howard, Mike?
I'm feeling like a post-hype sleeper kind of late-round flyer on O.J. Howard. I mean, it's going to really come down to if the hype builds up, if his ADP gets out of hand, you're going to want to stay away. But you know, right now, if you can get him with a late flyer, I think you take that chance. Like you said, super, super talented, ton of pedigree there. He had a handful of drops, sure, last year, but, scheme was obviously an issue there for him. And the quote, from Arians was, he's the best blocking tight end in the league, and he's improving as a receiver is what he said. And I think some of that was learning that offense. So I think there is a chance that he breaks through this season. I think there's a chance. And because of that pedigree, that's what you want on your bench, right? You want that pedigree. You want that upside. So I think if you're going to spend a bench spot on upside, maybe he's a guy you take a shot on late in your draft.
Met a Tampa Bay coach, and we were just talking, and I said to him, what the hell happened with O.J. Howard last year? And the coach sort of shrugged his shoulders and said, listen, he's a great kid. He works his tail off. Like, you know, it's just like, you know, it's just, there's only so many balls to go around. They really like Cameron Brate as well. But like, he was puzzled by that as well. Like I said, you know, just, and if, honestly, if the answer were yes, I wouldn't have brought this up and I just would have moved on. But, you know, I said, like, are there off the field issues that we're not aware about? Like, is he not bright? Is he not study? He's like, and the coach was like, no, like, we love him. Like, he is a great kid, works his tail off, does everything we ask. Like, it was just it's just a weird thing. So just to your point, Mike, just, you know, for whatever it's worth, like, the coach couldn't have been more effusive about O.J. Howard and thought his lack of production was puzzling. And, you know, there's a chance that there is a quarterback change in Tampa Bay. So we'll see about that. And so that could be, you know, interesting as well if that ends up happening.
We'll be really interesting to see whether or not O.J. Howard pieces it together if he is back in Tampa Bay next year. The Cardinals made a running
he'll
back.
He'll certainly have a, it'll cost you much lower to acquire him.
This is true.
This year than it did last year.
Sure. Yeah. It will be really interesting to see how things unfold in Tampa Bay this off season. The Cardinals made a running back switch in the middle of the year. Obviously it was, not necessarily the one you were expecting because David Johnson was a consensus top five player last year, but Steve Keim and GM made it clear they have a vision or at least some expectations or some hopes to retain Kenyon Drake long term, who was very, very good for them down the stretch last season. Well, he also sort of, I thought, I don't know if it was necessarily an olive branch, but he built a confidence, at least publicly back up in David Johnson. Matthew, I'll push this one aside to you because you certainly have a history with Cardinals running backs. Are you buying the idea that A, Kenyon Drake will be there long term, and B, are you buying any role whatsoever for David Johnson in Arizona?
I'm going to take the second one first and say, I am buying that David Johnson will have a role in Arizona. And honestly, Field, this is sort of your territory, right? Just because of the money.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not buying it though, but you go first. Yeah.
I'm buying it just because it would be tough for me to see somebody picking up that contract. You know, and it will cost the Cardinals. And again, this is your area better than mine, but it will cost the Cardinals more money to get rid of David Johnson in terms of dead cap money than to actually pay him and keep him on the roster this year. And so given the lack of production last year from David Johnson and his contract, it's hard to see a team, with the exception of maybe Tampa Bay and Bruce Arians, saying, sure, I'll pay $19 million and take David Johnson off your hands. And you're also thinking about the Cardinals, who have a lot of holes themselves, saying, yeah, I'll tell you what, Team X, take David Johnson off our hands. We'll eat 10 of the 19, and then we also have to pay Kenyon Drake to keep him around. Right. It just doesn't seem to make financial sense for a team that, quote unquote, as we speak now, isn't particularly close.
Yeah, so I think, by the way, so it's a little bit less onerous than you maybe described right there. It's $10 million salary that he's due, which I could actually see them saying, hey, Tampa Bay, we'll trade you David Johnson, and by the way, you trade us a fifth round pick and we pay half of David's salary. So you are on the hook for $5 million of David Johnson's salary. We get a fifth round pick and $5 million of relief. The Dolphins actually paid part of Ryan Tannehill's salary last year. So there's some precedent, recent precedent in the NFL in seeing this happen. I just don't envision David Johnson being back there next year. It's hard.
Hard to buy it just based on what we saw happen last year. I mean, there was not really a clear reason. And even throughout the season after he sort of disappeared, they're like, oh no, well, we still want to see what he can. If there was a more logical rationale, maybe I would buy it. But to all of a sudden, after the guy was basically ghosted by you,
that's the thing.
Why would I believe that, oh, yeah, we got a spot for him? I just don't buy it.
Yeah, I think this
good. He's good, Mike.
Yeah.
Dave Johnson is good at football.
Right.
That's the thing.
And he's young and he's in good shape.
Yeah, and his rushing efficiency, not great early on last season, but he was killing it as a pass catching back. You know, and so the fact that down the stretch, Kenyon Drake wasn't particularly dominant as a receiver. He was running it well. It was kind of shocking that Johnson wasn't mixed in more as a pass catcher. But I was at the podium for Kingsbury and Keim, and I picked up, you know, kind of, we're trying to like see through the words, right? And pick up kind of little things they're saying. You know, Kingsbury, Kenyon Drake fits the system. He also said Johnson needs to learn the system. Steve Keim said, Drake fits the scheme. You know, maybe there's something going on there where they were just, I mean, not maybe, they basically said it. They liked Drake in the offense. Kingsbury likes him in the offense. Johnson wasn't picking it up or something along those lines. I mean, there was some reason why they just preferred Drake to be on the field. I don't know why that would possibly be different this season. Now, that being said, if they somehow don't re-sign Kenyon Drake, maybe Johnson gets back in there and we can feel some confidence, but there's no way we're going to be talking about him in round one of the draft regardless of the outcome.
No, 100%, Mike. I agree with that. And I would agree if you took all the money out of it. So, I mean, again, Field's better at the contract stuff than I am. It just seems to me that, like, based on the money and things that I'm hearing, I feel like I actually buy it more than I don't. But I certainly would not be shocked. I certainly would not be shocked if a month from now we hear David Johnson's on another team.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, the Cardinals traded Josh Rosen a year into his rookie contract. Mm-hmm. A ton of money to do so. But
yeah, fair.
The rationale was you got to clear the, you know, you have to make this clear who the quarterback is, and the same with you make it clear who the running back is if Kenyon Drake is retained. Speaking of running backs and guys who might be on the bubble, a lot of just sort of buzz, some smoke, and sometimes when there's smoke, there's fire, that Devontae Freeman could be on the outs here in Atlanta. They have to do some cap cleanup. They are not going to tag Austin Hooper or any of their other free agents. So Hooper's likely to test the market, or will test the market, I should say, and make a ton of money for himself.
Right. And the other thing, by the way, real quickly, this isn't sort of our premise, but, I mean, the Calvin Ridley numbers with Austin Hooper gone are ridiculous.
For sure.
Like, assuming Austin Hooper signs with another team, you know, and that they don't sign another big-name, you know, free agent tight end or something like that, you would think that Calvin Ridley's due for a monster third season in the NFL.
We feel the same way there. He's been a very productive player through 2 years in Atlanta. But anyways, Devontae Freeman seems to be on the bubble, seems to be squarely on the bubble. This is a guy that was once extended by the Falcons, a guy who's been a huge part of their offense when healthy. But Stefania, it feels like for the past, I don't even know, two years, guy cannot stay healthy right now.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, and this year was certainly better than the ones previous to it, but you know, he's an aging running back. I mean, you get to that 5-year mark in the NFL and you don't expect to go uphill when it comes to health.
Right.
It feels like a...
Why'd you look at me when you said that, by the way?
Well, you know, aging was in my sentence.
Is that what it is? Okay, got it.
It naturally looked to my right.
Make clear.
I was looking at Field and I had to look away because I was talking about aging.
Right,
so, no, but I think Devontae Freeman, he's still got talent. There's no doubt, but it sort of feels like a natural parting of the ways point for them.
It feels that
given
way.
Everything.
It feels that way right now. It feels like they have so many holes they have to fill or guys they have to keep, and he's amongst the players that on the roster right now. Devontae Freeman is, who might be too highly priced. Mike, if a world exists in which Devontae Freeman is not there, and we're 3 weeks from when we're recording this away from the start of free agency, at which time or before then a lot of moves will be made, is a player that you view as a legit starting candidate currently on the roster?
No, I don't think so. Fully expect, assuming Freeman's gone, I think there's a really strong likelihood, as we just talked about, that he's gone. I fully expect them to get one of them top five backs on the board. There's like a tier this year, and we'll get into
draft the running backs.
Exactly. Is that not what I said? Yeah. And in the next,
on the board free agency, the draft.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Definitely talking about the draft. There's like a tier of five that really stand out right now. And we'll talk about more of that over the next couple of months. But I think they're going to bring in one of those guys, like a DeAndre Swift, for example, a Zach Moss, someone like that, Jonathan Taylor, one of those guys that can kind of fit that role. Zach Moss actually is drawing Devontae Freeman comps. Like, he might be a natural fit to come in there and take over as their feature back. And if that's a day one or day two pick, what have we seen in recent years? We've seen those guys land right on the fantasy radar. I think this could be an excellent landing spot for a rookie. And as it pertains to fantasy, it could be huge.
Just for those that may be wondering who's actually left over, the names that would be there if Devontae Freeman is cut: Ito Smith, the Judge. We've seen him. It's been okay every once in a while. Brian Hill, we've seen him. It's been okay every once in a while. Remember last year, of course, the opportunity that many people were expecting to be a much more productive one, it was not. And then Kadri Allison, former Pitt running back, that again, Kadri Allison.
He scored 4 of their 10 rushing touchdowns last season, believe it or not.
How about that? I would not have guessed that. So we think that if Devontae Freeman is gone, there's a chance that happens. There's somebody else that's not currently on the roster that would step into that role. Now, speaking of running backs, that it's maybe, I don't know if it's as much of a question about whether he'll be there or not. This is a contract that is legitimately very difficult to get out of. But Stefania, here we are again. It is deja vu. The Rams talking about Todd Gurley and managing that knee. Last year compared to this year, how is the message different, and what have we learned over the past 12 months?
I just think there's no surprise this year. I think you're going to see basically they figured out a way that they were comfortable with managing him across the season, even though they didn't really know how to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because that's where all the confusion came from. Like, no, there's no problem. We expect him to be like his old self. No, we're not engaging in load management. Well, yes, you are. Yeah. Because from the beginning, from the preseason, when I was out of camp, they were rotating him in and out. It looked, frankly, how it looked during the season. And why would you change? We know that he is, you know, they are managing a knee condition with him. And there's the hope that it's not going to flare up. And the way you do that is you continue to manage the workload. So they can call it whatever they want. But we saw a different type of role for Gurley. And I don't think that's going to change. And I think now that everyone's had a year to see it, they know what to expect.
Matthew, so let's assume that, again, he's back on the roster, as I just pointed out. Like, that contract is, like, legit scary tough to get out of.
Sure.
They don't have as much wiggle room as Arizona does because they got a bunch of players they've already paid or need to pay. Jalen Ramsey. But I think in some ways last year, this actually maybe worked out well for 2020 because other guys got shots or didn't get shots at all last year. Yeah. When Todd Gurley was being managed, because he was being managed by the end of the season. And I don't think anybody was like so good, Malcolm Brown or Daryl Henderson or anybody stepped into a backup role and was like, all right, here are reasons why you shouldn't be on the field as much as you were last year. Maybe I think Henderson has a chance to be the exception, but I'm not sure I really fear that, you know, Todd Gurley's managed role is going to mean that somebody else is going to step into a fantasy relevant role right away.
I spoke to Rams general manager Les Snead, you know, who's been a guest on this podcast before, yeah, and asked him point blank about that. And he said, you know, I said, like, look, last year this time, everyone was talking about Todd Gurley and load management. Having now gone through a year of it, how do you feel? He says, we feel really good about where we are with Todd. He says, look, we know it's a long season. And so I think you'll see less of Todd early on, and you'll see more of him as the season goes on.
Imagine
towards
that.
The end.
Pretty much what we said, that yeah, they're going to play the, you know, they've got the script, they're going to execute it again.
Right. And he said, you know, we felt really good about what Malcolm and Daryl did in limited spots where you have. And so you'll see them. And so the expectation I have after talking with him is that you'll see some of it. That Malcolm Brown will get like, you know, 2 or 3 series a game, that they'll take Todd Gurley off, but they're still going to want to give him, you know, a lot of the high leverage stuff, the red zone stuff, the goal line stuff, and you'll see more Daryl Henderson this year than you did previously. But I think, look, you know, and even though the touchdowns were down for Todd Gurley last year, he was still a productive fantasy back. He wasn't great, but he was reasonably productive. And so, you know, I think Todd Gurley is going to be a solid RB2 this year.
Yeah, there's two things that popped out to me, two things that concern me. One was the significant drop off in passing down work, right? You
Correct.
Know, you think about managing him, why did that happen? Like that was a kind of a surprise. The rushing numbers weren't too much different, at least in terms of usage. The efficiency obviously plummeted across the board. And also the offensive line. Are they going to improve that? That was a big change for them last year. They went from an elite offensive line to losing a couple guys, and other players struggled, and that offensive line was terrible. And I think that had two things that happened because of that. Curley's efficiency was awful, and obviously Jared Goff didn't have much time to throw it downfield to Brandon Cooks, and certainly faced a lot of pressure, and that really hurt that offense. So those are two things I'll be keeping an eye on throughout the offseason.
And it'll be interesting to see. The Rams are a team I think we're going to talk about a lot, because there are some rumors out there as to whether or not Brandon Cooks is still on this team.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see what happens there. Obviously, Tyler Higbee came on. It's really interesting. Cooper Kupp had really – my little Cooper Kupp had really significant – you know, season splits, like he was a wide receiver one, and then he just sort of disappeared there for a little while. Robert Woods was very consistent, but it's going to be a fascinating offense that I think we'll be talking a lot about this offseason.
By the way, we're all in agreement. We're all in on Tyler Higbee, right?
Yeah.
I mean, all indications here this week have been that he's the real deal and we can trust him as a tight end one.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are aware of this. I know Matthew was talking about how I wasn't necessarily, you know, locked in on podium one for the entirety of it. But Matthew every once in a while gets a bit absent-minded himself. But the Redskins have the best record in the NFL of the 2020 season. They're tied. But they still, they are number one in something.
Yeah, that's right, baby.
The Redskins might have a running back by committee type thing going on. Matthew, the words of Ron Rivera caught your attention. Your new head coach, Ron Rivera, Riverboat Ron, and he's talking about the idea that, like, it sounds like maybe, you know, maybe you would think, hey, Darius Geis, young, exciting. When he plays, it's good. But it doesn't sound like we're necessarily ever going to see a single workhorse back in D.C.
Yeah, I talked to Ron Rivera, actually asked him about this. And I said, look, when you were in Carolina, until you found Christian McCaffrey, you were always sort of a two-back guy. I'm just curious how you see this backfield playing out in Washington. And he said, we really like Darius, you know, but there's a reason we re-signed Adrian Peterson. We love what Adrian brings. He can, you know, if you look at the film from last year, he can still bring it. And, you know, they obviously love his leadership in the locker room as well. You know, Coach Rivera talking a lot about obviously wanting to change the culture in Washington. But what was interesting to me is that, and I spoke to a number, as you can imagine, I've spoken to a number of people in and around the Redskins, and one name that kept coming up to me was Bryce Love. I think a lot of people forget about, you know, the talented rookie out of Stanford last year, missed all last season with an injury, but he's somebody that they're pretty excited about, and I think you'll see a lot more Bryce Love this year than you might think.
So, Stefania, a reminder for people of what happened to Bryce Love. Tore his ACL during his final season of college.
He did.
And then also, Darius Geis, Stefania, I mean, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Is that the expression? Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, you did indeed.
Okay,
and
good.
So I don't think Bryce Love's an automatic. Again, it's going to come down to health here. Bryce Love had an ankle issue that was problematic before. He had an ACL issue. There were some teams that were a little bit nervous about drafting him. So you hope that he's going to be able to be productive. Obviously, they love him for the talent and they love him as a person. But again, it's until he's able to show that he can withstand the rigors of the NFL, I think that's going to be a question mark. And Darius Geis has already shown us that that's going to be a challenge for him. I mean, had the ACL tear, had the subsequent infection, delayed rehab, comes back, tears his meniscus, ends up missing, you know, goes on the short-term IR. I think it's going to be a problem for Darius Geis to stay healthy. He's already had significant injuries. You're talking about a running back, their knees, difficulty staying on the field, and they love the talent, but there's still a lot of question marks around it. So when I hear Ron Rivera saying by committee, understand he's coming in, so this personnel is new to him. He needs to see what he's got, and he's going to be wondering who's going to be there for me that I can consistently rely on.
You've got a 34-year-old. Soon to be 35.
But about that 34-year-old?
He's like a 24-year-old?
No, but that guy is the one who plays through everything.
Right.
Like,
that
it's surprisingly
he's a genetic freaking nature.
He has been hurt significantly and played through things that other guys don't play through. And that, when you talk about the leadership, that's one of the things that team loves about Adrian Peterson.
Sure. Role management for Adrian Peterson, certainly though, just a byproduct of his age and his lack of passing game acumen. Darius Geis, just the injuries we just talked about, Bryce Love coming off of a major injury. And don't forget Chris Thompson, who might be, you know, in some ways the steadiest of that whole group, but he's got some injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And is he going to be free agent this year? I think the extension ran out for Chris Thompson. If he may not be back.
We will see. But anyway, I think it's going to be hard to, at least in the preseason, you know, as we're drafting, to really do anything more than just take a flyer on any Redskins running back. You know, we think it's an offense that's going to struggle initially as well. So I thought that was just interesting that, but Coach Rivera was emphatic on wanting, you know, multiple guys back there. And then when you think about the personnel, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Before we move off the Redskins, just real quickly, I want to take a moment here. So, and move from the running back position to the quarterback position. This is the first podcast we've had since Stefania Bell debuted her story that she worked on for over a year, talking about and trailing and working with the Redskins and Alex Smith and his recovery, Stefania. So just a moment here.
Yeah.
Just huge applause. Unbelievable story. Unbelievable work there on Alex Smith. You want to talk a little bit about that project real quickly?
Yes.
And if people haven't seen it yet, where they can find it?
No. So, it's not quite done yet. We still have a little bit more to add, but the premiere, it will be an E60 special in primetime on April 28th, the Tuesday after the draft. Can't give you the exact time yet, but expect to see some promotion throughout the draft weekend. But really, it's the story of Alex Smith. Everybody knows he had this devastating injury, but I think you're going to see a lot more about the whole person, everything that shaped him, his career arc, which I think after spending so much time with him and his family, you're going to be inspired. you might have a tear or two, but it's really, I don't know. He's trying to do something no professional athlete has ever done in terms of what he's coming back from. And I will leave it with that teaser. And I don't know that we're going to have the answers. You're going to have to see what he's been through and where he's headed. But, as of right now, as of the moment where we are recording this podcast, it is certainly the door is open for him to try to return to football.
Which would be, you know, which would be great for the Redskins, would be great for Dwayne Haskins. Obviously, he's a leader. I spoke with Kyle Smith of the Redskins and asked about Alex Smith. He said, look, you know, hey, that's the doctors. He's got to be medically cleared. And I said, in a world where Alex Smith is medically cleared, he says he's competing for the starting job, 100%. You know, he's competing. So we'll see on that. But great work by Stefanian. If you haven't seen the teaser video that went around.
Yeah, or, it's out. You know, it's a pinned tweet in my Twitter. You can see the 60-second trailer for the
So, piece. Yeah, go check that out at Stefanian underscore ESPN. And the Outside the Lines episode that was about this story as well was terrific.
The biggest story of the week here in Indianapolis is the almost completed, or at least – almost ready to be voted upon CBA, negotiated between, of course, the NFLPA and the league, the 32 owners or the 32 ownership groups. It might impact the franchise tag window, when the franchise tag window actually begins. As of right now, it's supposed to begin tomorrow, which I don't know if there's been any update to suggest that it won't open up tomorrow, but as of right now, it is supposed to open up tomorrow morning, or I guess tomorrow when people wake up. AJ Green seems likely for the franchise tag. Matthew, this is a player that obviously did not play at all last year, much to the chagrin of many people. One of those curious recoveries from the ankle that we, you know, you're hopeful. And then when the team is 0 and whatever, it was, are we really bringing back a 31-year-old wide receiver? But sounds like he's bound for the franchise tag, and that would mean right back to Cincinnati, which catching passes from Joe Burrow.
Yeah, and I think that suddenly becomes interesting. I mean, like, Cincinnati's sort of become this joke, but, like, Field, you and I talked about this off-air, but, like, you know, as you talk about sort of the quote unquote, you know, the 10 teams that are picking for the first 10 teams picking in the NFL draft. And you said, you know, one of these teams made the playoffs 6 of the last 10 years.
Right.
Like it would probably take you a while before you realize, oh, yeah, it was the Bengals. Yeah. And so, you know, you suddenly think about this offense, right? Joe Mixon came alive towards the end of last year.
Yeah, for sure.
So another nice season from Tyler Boyd. You get AJ Green back. You have Joe Burrow under center. I thought we saw some flashes from Auden Tate. Like you don't love him as a number two, but as a number three is a complimentary piece to Tyler Boyd and AJ Green. All of a sudden, like the Cincinnati offense looks kind of interesting there. I mean, sure. Just having AJ Green on the field opens up the entire offense. And I think given the fact that they are likely to take Joe Burrow with the number one pick, you know, they're going to want excitement, and they're going to want their rookie, their prize franchise quarterback to have as many weapons as possible.
Yeah, going to add their prize last year in the draft was first rounder Jonah Williams, who was out for the whole season. They get him back too. I mean, this offense and this team could make a pretty quick leap this season if Burrow is decent, maybe to Kyler Murray's level from last season, and certainly if they add some pieces, on the offensive and on the offensive line and on defense.
Yeah, they need to do some major work along the offensive line.
100%.
If they do that, which I know is a big if, but you know, they certainly have the makings of at least an exciting offense, more exciting to watch than the one that we saw for much of last year. Again, keep an eye.
And we saw flashes from John Ross last year too.
Yeah, keep an eye on whether or not that franchise tag window opens tomorrow. But the reality is that a lot of teams don't tag a player at the beginning of the franchise tag window. They do it at the end of the window when they haven't been able to get a long-term deal done. But it seems like AJ Green could be staying with the only team that he has ever played for in the Bengals. And the player who's nowhere close to the franchise tag because he just crushed it as a rookie, Josh Jacobs, the offensive rookie of the year. In some people's eyes, Kyler Murray ended up winning the award. But there were some comments from Mike Mayock, the general manager of the Stefanian, did you have a different vote?
No. Daniel is doing a thumbs up.
Okay, got it. Matthew, some
comments. You wanted Hawkinson for Rookie of the Year? Daniel?
I am all in. Listen, Mike Clay was fantastic with his projections of Kyler Murray last year. We talked about this.
Sure.
I just think that Josh Jacobs was actually better for his team than what Kyler Murray was.
My fantasy ride or die, Josh Jacobs.
Yeah. So it was nothing against Kyler Murray. I just think that Josh Jacobs was a better rookie. That's all I'm saying.
Fair enough. But Josh Jacobs, according to Mike Mayock, might be even more involved in the offense this year, Matthew, which is sort of a scary thought because he was that good last year in a not even full-time role.
Yeah, you know, this is again another podium three call, just FYI. You know, I was paying attention. Right. I was there, and so Mike Mayock.
So, by the way, I just gotta say, you're so proud of yourself for being on time and paying attention.
100%. You know, I did my job.
And you see how good that feels? Like, yeah. You might consider trying that throughout the year.
I'm like a young Belichick. I did my job. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, so Mayock was asked about that, and they said, yeah, look, there's a lot of things that you want out of your rookie quarterback in terms of, I'm sorry, your rookie running back in terms of learning the protections, learning the schemes, knowing which holes to hit, understanding the playbook and the offense. And now, you know, and Mayock just talked about this, and he talked about this with a couple of different players, but how the most important, you know, jump that he thinks the biggest jump any player ever makes is from year one to year two. And so, you know, with Josh Jacobs entering his second year, they're like, we know he has the skill set to catch the ball. And so now that he's entering his second year, we have high expectations for Josh as a part of this entire offense, but specifically in terms of catching the ball and being more involved in the passing game.
So I want to buy this fully.
Yep.
But about 10 days ago, maybe 14 days ago, they gave Jalen Richard a two-year, $7 million extension. So it's like, yeah, great. Like the guy that's really good at catching passes just got a new contract, which that's actually a pretty good value deal for him, given his role, Mike. So I would like to be all the way in on this, but I still have reservations about whether they'll actually turn him into a
Marlon Mack, right? I mean, Marlon Mack is the guy I'm worried about. Like that he's and going to end up kind of like Marlon Mack,
like
where
Marlon
you could get
Mack.
Exactly. Okay. That's where you're right.
Sure, yeah,
I took that the opposite there of the way you were going, but nonetheless, you know, a guy that's in the 250 to maybe 270 carry range, scores eight touchdowns,
to 30 catches.
Exactly. Even if he's efficient as a rusher, that could limit him. But look, he was top 15 in fantasy points per game last season with only 20 catches. They did talk about the fact that they need him better in pass protection, and he also needs to not drop as many balls. He had 3 drops on only 27 targets last season. So he needs to be better as a pass blocker and as a pass catcher if he wants to get on the field over Jalen Richard. But what we do know is that he will get a huge bulk of the carries and touchdown opportunities for this Raiders team. So it's just a matter of them getting down near the goal line and getting him them opportunities. But nonetheless, I think we agree he's a borderline RB1. Certainly, in PPR, a strong RB2 at worst.
He's got to get himself healthy too, Stefania. He was, at the end of the season, that dude was playing through, I mean, I know he didn't play towards the end of the season, for a couple of games there, but it was like, every time I turned, he was posting a new surgery on his IG story. Felt that way, at least. Josh Jacobs here. Like, broken shoulder and, right, broken shoulder. Is that what it was?
Well, it was funny because he said his shoulder would have to be broken for him not to play, and yet he played through some kind of fracture in his shoulder. And I think finally what ended up happening was the team was like, okay, long-term consideration, we got to end up protecting the player. One of the things Josh Jacobs made clear, if you watch the Hard Knocks, you saw it over and over again, was that he wanted to prove that he could be as tough as they needed him to be. Like, this is a kid who had some hard, tough times growing up, and he wasn't going to let something like what he considered a small injury get in the way, and he wanted to prove himself. And I think once he established that, they were like, okay, we buy it. Now you got to come out. So I think it was really primarily the one issue, but he fluctuated on the injury report as a result.
Yeah, he was really irritated when he wasn't able to play.
Yes,
like he really,
right,
and that's kind of something
right.
you want from your fantasy running back too.
He was in tears one night when they took his equipment away.
So the last one here
is like the opposite of me. Like when Daniel says like you don't have to do the podcast, I'm like, it's tears of joy, is what it is.
So this is not really a buy or sell, more just a health update, Stefania. Probably one of the more notable ones we've gotten. It was actually before the combine began on Jarvis Landry, who, speaking of tough hombres, that guy plays through anything, and he had a monster year. Of all the things that went wrong in Cleveland last year, Jarvis Landry was not one of them. He was fantastic for them, and it turned out he was doing so while playing on a bad hip.
It's really interesting, right? Because here, he and Odell, since college, are teammates. We knew Odell was hurt from the preseason, you know, and we knew he wasn't quite right. He couldn't fully explode. Odell, up, down, everything. We were very aware that Odell was playing injured, and he was mostly not really that present, if you will, during the games. But the point is, we were very aware that he was playing injured. We were not that aware of Jarvis Landry playing through a lot the pain and technically an injury in the sense that he had a condition that he ultimately got treated in the offseason. What was also interesting is what made Jarvis Landry decide to go through this surgery. He related it to Kobe, that when Kobe passed away and he was watching a lot of films and documentaries and looking at what Kobe's mentality was, he looked at himself in the mirror and said, you can't fake it. You can't keep playing through this pain. If you really want to be the best and you want to go out and give your team the best, then you have to go through this surgery to get yourself to that position. So it sounds like he was dealing with an impingement in his hip and had one of these resurfacing procedures. it takes a while to come back from that, mostly because you have to retrain all the muscles around your hip to get back to the level of production. So they say he's out till August. He'll obviously be making progression up until then, but I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't even see him in a preseason game.
Unfortunately, the Browns now, again, are dealing with one of their incredible wide receivers, not really available during the offseason. Odell decided to not really be a huge participant in OTAs last year, and then he was banged up himself, as we know, with the core muscle surgery and everything that he went through. He had his own surgery earlier this offseason. But, Mike, any sort of takeaway here on Jarvis Landry? Is there anybody that's sort of primed to see a lot of reps during practice, which kind of matters?
Not right now, right? Rashard Higgins is a free agent. I don't think they have an answer for the three spot right now. So we'll see if they draft one of these. Obviously, this is a insanely huge, insanely great and deep wide receiver rookie class this year. So if they draft one, maybe that player is able to make some noise. But, you know, Jarvis Landry has been a top 18 fantasy receiver 5 years in a row, ever since his rookie season. The guy has generated such a high floor. So if he is healthy and he's back, you know, perhaps he'll be undervalued and we could take advantage, because there was a very real connection with him and Baker Mayfield. And I'm super excited for Kevin Stefanski running the show for that offense. I mean, he did terrific things with that Vikings offense last season, and now he's, of course, in Cleveland.
I would agree with everything just Mike said. The other thing is that, you know, sort of the rumors around here are that Kareem Hunt is expected to return to the Cleveland Browns as well. And so it's sort of interesting to think about that if those guys are healthy, Baker Mayfield, we like Kevin Stefanski as the offense coordinator. Certainly we have a little more confidence in then and what they were doing yet last year under Freddie Kitchens. And so, a full year of Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt in the backfield, Landry and Beckham, they need to find a three. Maybe they can get, hopefully they get Njoku a little bit more involved and hopefully he gets healthy as well. But suddenly, like, could the Browns be a post-hype sleeper team? You know, suddenly.
No doubt.
So, you know, there's certainly enough talented pieces on the field that if they can figure it out and get Baker right, you know, could be really interesting for fantasy.
Nowhere to go but up in Cleveland. I know they're sick of hearing that, but seriously, after last year, expectations are going to be lowered, as Matthew just mentioned, but they've got talent aplenty. Kareem Hunt himself, also a restricted free agent. So if the Browns want to keep him, he will be in Cleveland for at least the 2020 season. A lot of fun here in the combine. Most of the sound is done, not in terms of players. Players will speak, and of course the workouts begin Thursday night, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. You may have already seen
some of Thursday afternoon.
Okay. Yep.
I mean, like, I heard the word workout and I was like, you know, let me peace out. Let me get out of town.
There you go. So we have most, I believe there might be a couple coaches left over to speak tomorrow. Is that right? I think maybe
Vrabel
and John Robinson.
Today, I think they were, I thought they were today. But,
yeah. Okay.
They finished up today.
They finished up today. I'm confusing all my days here. Too busy hanging out at Podium One and being so diligent.
It was unbelievable. It was like a social hour over there. Like, feel like set up shop.
Fields in high demand. Yeah.
It was unbelievable. He was taking selfies with fans and, you know, handing out drinks. The whole thing.
Don't remember that part, but what do I know? Daniel, you got some closing words here before we say goodbye.
Yeah, I just want to say really quickly a big thank you to our sponsors, Adult Diapers and Pepto-Bismol, for helping to make this show possible tonight. Huge fan.
Thank you for that, Daniel. And by the way, for those of you that have not already downloaded and subscribed to it, check out the Adam Schefter podcast, which there was at least one episode taped this week, a couple episodes taped this week here in Indianapolis, which includes Chiefs GM Brett Veach. And also, our friends from Part of My Take, Big Cat and PFT commenter.
Yeah, Daniel Dopp doing double duty here, just working on our podcast, working on the Adam Schefter podcast.
Committing podadultery.
Well, I mean, right? I don't think people really care to hear my voice any more than they already do. So that's sort of I figured, you know, I didn't want to, you know.
I care.
Oh, well, that's
where
so kind of you.
Thank
you, Stefania. Anywhere you subscribe to your podcast.
I love hearing your voice on a podcast that isn't this one. It's great.
Matthew, coming from you.
Great.
Right? It's like, how many podcasts have you been on recently? In any event, we are going to talk to you guys at some point here soon, just a few weeks away from NFL free agency, the craziest offseason ever, or maybe ever, for Mike and Daniel and Stefania and Matthew. I'm Field. We'll talk to you guys later.
Peace out!
I forgot who your co-host is.
Matthew.
And it's you in the 06010.